shed.
Hello and welcome to day 6 of the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. It's going pretty well, isn't it? I mean, loved that one yesterday. Thanks so much for that, Ty. If you haven't heard it, sorry for the spoiler, but Tricia Helfer from Battlestar Galactica was our guest yesterday. And I just really enjoyed that contrast between the characters that she played in Battlestar Galactica and the person that she is. Really, really cool stuff. Thanks, Ty. Actually, almost as cool as today's guest. Let's open door number 6.
My name is Dr. Louisa Preston. I'm a UK Space Agency Research Fellow at Birkbeck University of London, and I'm an astrobiologist studying different environments across the Earth that mimic those that exist on Mars today or used to exist on Mars in the past, looking for ways that life might be able to survive.
Why Mars?
Well, that's a good question. I think because Mars is the closest planet to us, it means it's very accessible. When we look at its history, we can see that it does resemble the Earth in many different ways, especially Earth in its past. And so it kind of sets the example, you know, Earth managed to have life arise on its surface. So why couldn't Mars have done? It's just that Mars's history shows that it's changed a lot in its climate, which now is maybe inhospitable to life, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't once there. And so that's part of my work, is trying to find out ways that we can dig it up and figure out where it might be hiding and how we can find it.
And where are the places on Earth that are like Mars?
It depends on what time of Mars you're looking at. In general, if we think about Mars today, a very cold, dry, dusty environment, places such as the Antarctic Dry Valleys or many places in Antarctica or the Arctic, the Canadian High Arctic as well, basically the cold places on Earth that are quite inaccessible. When you go back in Mars's history, we can look at times when there was volcanism on its surface, so we can look at volcanoes on the Earth, hot springs associated with them, ancient river channels and floodplains. So there are loads of places around the Earth that we can look to try and understand different periods of Martian history.
And do you get to go there yourself?
I say 50-50. I've been to sort of Rio Tinto to look at acidic rivers with acidic life forms. I seem to go to Iceland yearly to study the volcanoes and the hot springs and cold environments there, but I haven't quite made it to Antarctica yet.
Okay.
I have yet.
I mean, I'm kind of thinking that young Louisa went, right, what can I do that will take me all around the world to study really cool stuff? I know.
I don't know if it was young Louisa, but definitely PhD Louisa. I definitely discussed it with my supervisors, and we basically just said, where do we want to go on field work? And we all said New Zealand and Iceland. So we said, right, let's come up with a project that means we can go and study hot springs there. Yeah, I don't know about young Louisa. I think she went to the Grand Canyon with her dad. And I'm pretty certain he tried to explain to me what happened at the Grand Canyon, and I wasn't convinced by his explanation because he was basically making it up. And I think that sort of sparked my interest as, you know, there is a giant crack in the Earth. How did that happen? And no one could tell me. So,
yeah,
I think that's where I came from.
OK, what was his explanation? Can you remember?
I think to be fair, he wasn't completely wrong. He said there was once a really big river here. And then he led it on to being, and then the Earth broke. I think he just was trying to sort of stop me talking and get me away from the edge, which is normally what I was doing as well. So,
terrifying. You're studying the stuff here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then just last week, NASA landed NASA InSight on Mars. How cool was that?
Very cool. Although it's not. It is very cool, but you can feel all of the European scientists sort of going, okay, it's NASA, yay. But, you know, our mission's in a few years' time, so we're focusing on ExoMars a little bit more than InSight. We're more than excited for them and very excited to use all their data as and when it comes out. And I'm sure it's going to reveal some really interesting things about the inside of Mars. But, yeah, we're trying to keep our eye on the prize and actually sort of focus on our mission as well.
Will it inform what you're studying?
Not really. InSight's not sort of a life detecting mission or an astrobiology mission. It will be very, I mean, it's got a seismometer on it, so it's going to be you know, studying the internal workings of Mars. And I think that's fascinating. I think that'll teach us a lot about Mars's history and quite possibly the potential for life to survive there now, depending on what's going on inside Mars. So maybe sort of in the broad area, you know, any information about Mars will help us in our search for life on it, but it's not directly involved with what I do know.
Yeah, okay. So tell us about ExoMars then. What's that going to look for?
So ExoMars is really exciting. She is a little robot, looks a little bit like Wally, and she is going to be searching for biosignatures of life. So one of the first missions to actually be specifically designed to go to look for evidence of life. Her main selling point, apart from having a multitude of life detecting instruments on her, is that she has a 2-meter drill, and that's going to drill 2 meters down into the crust of Mars through all the dusty layers and the top layers that have been bathed in UV radiation and are full of perchlorates that might be sort of hard for life to survive in, past that to the surface, to the subsurface, where all that life could actually survive and have little pockets of water and be buried. So it could be accessing a part of Mars we've never seen before. And what's really exciting about the drill is there's actually a tiny spectrometer built into the drill. So as the drill goes down, it's going to be analysing, as it spins, every single rock strata and every single molecule it comes into contact with, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool, isn't it? Well, one of the things that NASA does really well is land on Mars, right?
Yes.
So have you got 2 ExoMarses in case the first one crashes?
No. To be fair, we do land on Mars.
Yeah.
We just break in the process.
Yeah.
No, we don't, no. No. But, I mean, you know, Schiaparelli had 2 main functions. Obviously, it was going to do a little bit of work when it was there, but its main job was to be a practice and for us to see about our landing, see what worked, see what didn't work, so that when it came to ExoMars, we wouldn't have similar problems, so...
I mean, I guess it's not really your job, is it, to land the thing on Mars? But
no.
But it's, I mean, because one of the things, I was talking to somebody last night actually about this, that, you know, these people who think that it's all faked, right? The acting that scientists can do when their stuff lands on Mars is incredible, right? I mean, what acting?
We're not that skilled. We couldn't do that. No, it's true. I'm part of the science team for PanCam, which are the eyes of the rover. So our only job is basically when the rover lands that it can see where it's going. So as long as we can do that job, the engineers can land it and get it working for us.
Oh, yeah. Will you get to see it launch and then you'd be sitting in the control room watching it land? Does that happen? Or?
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah, quite possibly. We... at least definitely for arrival on Mars, there's going to have to be a huge PanCam team there because, I mean, you saw from InSight, the first thing you get is an image back from the eyes of the rover. So that's what our job will be. So I think we're all fighting to see who will be there for landing. But I'd imagine most of the team will have to be there because there's just going to be so much to do so quickly.
I think you're right. You all need to be there. And you need someone to come and do a podcast about it, and I think that's really important.
Matching polo shirts, I feel like that needs to be the way to
yes. Hey, could you send me one of those polo shirts and I'll just walk in as if I'm supposed to be there and everyone would be fine with it? It'd be cool.
Based in Turin, I don't know if the Europeans go for the matching polo shirts. I'm not sure. To find out.
Yeah, fair enough. I was going to say we need a really small one as well for Lyra, my daughter, because she'll want to come. We watched it InSight the other night. She said, Daddy, I don't care what time they are. I want to watch every landing on Mars. I want to.
That's cool. Well, you know, if I can get one, I will, because I'm pretty certain my son will want one too.
Yeah. When's it going? When's it happening?
It takes off summer 2020. It should be arriving March 2021.
And where's it launching from?
I don't know.
Okay. Don't worry. I just need to plan my holidays. That's basically what I'm thinking. Although I've just seen opening in winter 2019, the Star Wars land at Disney World. So So I'm just thinking I'm going to have to be in America then, whatever happens. So maybe if you could get them to launch it from Florida, that would be ideal. Yeah,
I have a feeling it might be Russia, but you never
know. Yeah, fair enough. Another thing I was doing with Lyra the other day, we were looking through images of the moons of Jupiter and things, and we came obviously to Europa, and I was telling her about the lines on Europa and what they are, and she said, Daddy, I want to be alive when they land on Europa. Is that going to happen?
Well, she might be alive. I'm not convinced we will be. But we're not sending a lander. I mean, not yet. I mean, obviously, that would be amazing. But the lander's not really in the plans at the moment. It's Europa Clipper is the next one that's going. And it's going to be an orbital mission. It's just going to image and probably do GPR, you know, probably try and study the surface and try and send some, you know, echoes or almost down to try and see underneath the surface a bit. But no, we're not landing on it yet. I think we need to know more about it before we do that, because there could be some crazy good chemistry going on there and we would really mess it up.
If we
landed on it yet. Plus it'd be quite...
There's also a specific warning about attempting no landing there, I believe, in Arthur C. Clarke.
Oh, Arthur C. Clarke did that, yep.
So maybe for some people won't know what we're talking about. Can you tell us a bit about Europa and why it might be potentially interesting for studying astrobiology?
Europa is an incredible moon that when it first got imaged, we realised that it was a surface covered in ice. But when more information was gathered, it started to appear there was actually an ocean inside it. We're guessing a salty water ocean, but obviously we don't quite know. That is convecting inside it. We've also seen some plumes erupting from the surface through the ice. Not very many, nothing like Enceladus, where we see these massive geysers shooting up, but still a few, which is exciting. And then the surface of Europa's got this, I don't even know if we completely know how thick icy shell yet, but you know, tens of kilometres almost certainly. And across the surface of that, all these crisscross lines, which are a bit reddy in colour. And we think that's salts and different kinds of material that are being brought up from the ocean underneath. So for us, it's very exciting because if you look at Antarctica, you can see lakes of liquid water that are existing underneath the icy surface, and they are teeming with life. Some of them are fueled by hot springs coming up from this under depth of the planet. And so we think that could, there's no reason why that couldn't happen on Europa as well. So there could be anything theoretically living in the ocean underneath the ice of Europa. Us getting access to that would be very difficult, but that's why the crisscross markings on the surface are so interesting, because if they are being brought up from the center of the moon, then they could tell us a huge amount about what's going on inside it. And that's part of the research that some of my students are doing at the moment.
Cool. If you're going to design a mission to find life in our solar system, what does it look like today?
The mission or the life?
Oh, both. Why not?
If we were going to look for life that was existing today, I'm afraid it'd be really dull. It would be a bacteria. Something really tiny. We always say that whenever there's a life-detecting mission and we have to talk to the public about it, we always feel like we ruin it for them, because they're hoping for this little thing crawling across the surface and we'll be excited for an amino acid or a fat or anything that would be like that. And that's the kind of life we're talking about, molecular, very small, and kind of mission. I don't know, Titan? Send a mission to Titan. I mean, with all the methane lakes that exist there, the icy surface, the really thick atmosphere. I mean, there was one mission designed to potentially send a boat to land on Titan and open up and sail across the sea, which would just be so.
With little humanoid robots in it rowing.
I think so. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Anything we do just has to be robot capable, because there's no way we can send us yet. We're too fragile.
Yeah, that's a shame. But, you know, one day. So this book, Goldilocks and the Water Bears, I think it's the best book title I've ever seen.
My husband will be so proud. He came up with it. And I think it's been about 50-50 about the title, I think. Well, I think it's one of those that if you understand the subject even slightly, it makes a lot of sense and it's very clever. But I think if you don't, it's a bit potentially a bit misleading, so a bit controversial. But yeah, he's very proud of that, I'll tell him.
But the thing is, right, it's intriguing, and then you have to read it to find out what it means.
I agree.
Yeah, or I could ask you now and you could tell people and then they could...
Well, yeah, so there's many dimensions to it, obviously. So Goldilocks, in this sense, refers to the Goldilocks zone of our or any other solar system, which is that almost perfect distance away from a star where a planet or a moon would have just the right temperature to be not too hot, not too cold, so that liquid water could be stable on its surface. And we use the search for liquid water as sort of almost a biomarker, as a kind of thing that life, we know all life on Earth needs, therefore it's a good thing to start looking for. Yeah, then the water bears, my water bears, they're also called tardigrades, and they are what we would say the hardiest animals, and they are animals on the planet. They're these teeny tiny dust sort of size moss piglets, armoured pandas, they've all got different names. Some say ugly, I think they're a bit like Marmite. Some people think they're ugly, some people think they're really cute. But they're just absolutely incredible. They, on their own, are very fragile, very squishy, can be broken very easily. But the second they find an environment that doesn't have enough water or is too hot for them or too cold, they'll instantly ball themselves up into a teeny tiny ball, expelling 97% of their body moisture and just basically go into hibernation. And they can float around on the wind, they can survive in ice, they've been up to the space station, they've gone into the vacuum of space, and then all they need is a little bit of water added to them, so a better environment, and they uncurl from their ball in a matter of minutes, and they just carry on with their lives. They're incredible. They're so tough, and they're incredible. So,
and if they're really big, you can use them to power a spaceship, right?
I know. That discovery became very interesting as soon as the giant tardigrade came in.
Yeah. What did you make of it then?
Do you know what? I think it was a slow burner. I watched the first couple of episodes and felt myself not quite loving it, but I wanted to love it. But then the story around the tardigrade and everything else, it just took time to warm up. But I actually really enjoyed it. Good. Do you like it?
I love it. It's new Star Trek, right? So it's on a winner.
Yeah.
I love the characters. It's a bit darker than maybe I hoped it would be, but that's my only slight criticism. I don't tell anyone, right? It's fine, no one will know. But I cried in the last episode. It made me cry, and I literally walked into the garden to just kind of look at some stars and get over how happy it made me. I think that's a good series, right? If that's your
reaction. I mean, they're making a second series, right? Aren't they? So
yeah. Starts in January. We're all right. So are you, Ed, let's talk, go back to young Louisa. Is young Louisa a Star Trek science fiction fan, and that's how you got into this?
Yeah, very much so. I don't know if it's because my dad didn't have a boy and he only had me. So he was like, right, I'm going to impart all of my wisdom on you. Yeah, I loved Star Trek. I watched all of them, all the different generations. Watched Star Wars as well. I'm not in a camp. I like both. I'm not going to commit to one or the other. Yeah, I love them all.
That's one of those questions that people say to it's one of the, as a science fiction fan, people say to you, Star Trek or Star Wars? And it's like, well, do you like ham or cheese in your toasty? I mean,
it's not quite an Oasis or Blur moment, but it's quite.
It's not. I just don't. It's like, well, why would you? Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
I like both.
What have you been enjoying recently? Anything?
I don't get to go to the cinema as much as I used to, so time's sad. But you know what? Marvel is. I'm really enjoying all the Marvel stuff at the moment. I recently watched Avengers: Infinity War and actually really enjoyed it. I actually thought it was really good. I heard lots of bad stuff about it, but I really liked it. Black Panther was amazing.
Yeah.
I like Wonder Woman, and I know it makes it a bit of a feminist thing to say, oh, of course you like Wonder Woman, but I generally thought it was really well done. Really, really good. Obviously, Star Trek Discovery. Oh my goodness, I watch anything science fiction that pops up on Netflix. This is what I've realised. It's sort of my escapism.
Yeah. Did you watch Lost in Space?
I watched the first couple and then sort of lost it a bit.
Right.
But... I don't know if I blame that or the fact I had a baby. Could be either.
It's sort of pitched at people who have got 12-year-olds. And you have to put yourself in that mindset in order to enjoy it. Either imagine you're 12, which is really easy for me, or imagine you've got a 12-year-old.
I mean, at the moment, sort of, you know, when Doctor Who started, my eldest is 4.5, so he's a tad too young to watch it. So I keep missing it because he's awake, but I don't get control of the TV, so I have to. It's like a sort of like a naughty pleasure. I get to go later on at night watch Doctor Who by myself.
It's good though, isn't it?
I really like it. I think she's really good.
Yeah, she's great. I like the whole thing, really. There was one thing I don't like, but I'm not going to say it because I can't be bothered to be negative today. I'm really, really loving it. I do have an issue, actually. I'll say one thing, which is this: it's stopping and then not appearing again next year. You know, and that's just...
Really?
That's just, yeah, because they want... their excuses, they want to... not rush it and give us the best that they possibly can, and it's like, well, it's an okay excuse, but every day you've got hours of people talking about dancing, so just give us an hour a week. That's all I'm asking, you know.
No, it's true. It is very true. Are you looking forward to seeing Aquaman? Because that's out soon, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I am. I was going to say about Wonder Woman, actually. I think it's really, really good and really shocking how good it is, because that particular house doesn't make good films, in my opinion. And then for them to pull that one out of the bag was really impressive. I mean, I go and watch them all, right? I can't not go just in case. And that one was proof in my stupidity of going to watch the films knowing that they're going to be rubbish. Like, I went to see Batman versus Superman, and that looked like it was going to be the worst film ever made. It turns out it was nearly, but Man of Steel was still worse. And I keep going, and then Wonder Woman came along, and it was like, it was worth sticking in.
Yeah, no, it's true. And Marvel are bringing out Captain Marvel soon.
Yeah, well, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Do you read stuff?
Do you know what I do? I don't really. I've realised this when it comes to sort of, because I commute a lot, so I do read on the train, but I find myself reading a lot of fantasy when I'm on the train, not really science fiction necessarily. Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, or whatever that title is, I can't remember now. It's such a long title, I always get it wrong. But stuff like that, and I love it. Absolutely love it. But I don't read as necessarily as much science fiction. I think when I read science fiction, it feels a bit too much like work. I don't mind sitting in front of the TV to watch it, but when I read it, it feels like work. And, you know, lots of our papers we read, they could be out of science fiction, but film, so.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much the science fiction bit of science, isn't it? Because at the moment, we don't have any astrobiology. So you're kind of studying something that we don't even know if it exists yet.
I know. No one can prove us wrong yet. It's quite good. At some point, we'll get... As soon as we find life, we'll all have to go, right?
Okay, okay, right. One last thing now. Are you writing anything else?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
but it hasn't been 100% agreed upon yet. So that's okay. All I can say. I did say I wouldn't write anything else once I wrote that book, because I felt like I tapped out all my knowledge. But it turns out going on maternity leave is actually really good for me. I wrote my first book on maternity leave, and then I went off on leave again and got another idea. So that's the way it goes. But I can't say anything yet, because there's been no signing yet. Once my publishers agree to it, then yeah, I will happily tell you.
It's in the same topic area though, right?
Yes.
Biology? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Then I'm interested. So that.
I work. Well, as long as they agree to it, it will be due to come out sort of just around the time that ExoMars lands. So.
Oh, brilliant! Fantastic. Well, if you see a bloke that looks a bit like me wearing an ExoMars polo shirt, don't tell security. That's my top tip. See you there.
Bye.
Thanks so much to Louisa for joining us here on The Cosmic Shed. I hope that won't be the last time that Louisa joins us. I really recommend Louisa's talks on YouTube. I'll post a couple of links to those on The Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com. I had to cut a little bit off the end of that conversation because our conversation did carry on about science fiction, but if I left it in, there'd be spoilers about who we've got coming up on the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. We'll see you tomorrow for day 7.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.